From the Tao Te Ching, number one. Existence is beyond the power of words to define. Terms may be used, but are none of them absolute. In the beginning of heaven and earth, there were no words. Words came out of the womb of matter. And whether someone dispassionately sees the core of life or passionately sees the surface, the core and the surface are essentially the same, words making them different, only to express appearance. If name be needed, wonder names them both. From wonder into wonder, existence opens. Good morning. I am Michael Nelson, the minister here at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan, Kansas. We gather this morning to remember the gift of our wholeness, how each of us is connected to one another. We gather to explore the great mystery of our existence so that we do not forget the wonder into which we are born and will die. We come to be refreshed and inspired so that we may help one another and all life forms when they suffer from the misuse of power, the misunderstanding of the delicate balance of this beautiful earth we inhabit. With true sincerity, let us be open to one another and all that our progressive faith offers. May the light that shines upon this earth illuminate the lines that connect us all. May this chalice and its flame bring us into the circle of love, which praises the beginning and the end and all that flows between. Now's the time for announcements, and we have a few in addition to those that you can read in our order of service. For the picnic next Sunday, please bring your own table service. Lemonade will be served. Saturday. Did I say Saturday? What did I say? Oh, please, do not come on Sunday to Keats Park. Come on Saturday. Fellowship dinners will be starting in September with the first dinner on Friday, September 7th, to be hosted by Uncle Lorenz. There's a sign-up sheet out in the narthex. These monthly potluck dinners are a chance for new and old UUs to join fellow UUs for good food and convivial conversation. Please join. Sign up. Now let us stand as you are able, if you feel like it, and let us sing with joy for the beauty of the earth, number 21.
Oh,
please remain standing and say hello to your neighbor and especially to someone who you might not know. All right. Thank you, everyone. Thank you. I don't know what I'm thanking you for, but thank you anyway. For those of you who might be interested in finding out more about what it means to be a member of this great fellowship, you can talk to me, and I think Shirley Holbrook is... Wave, Shirley. There she is. You can talk to her or I or Kathleen Tenona, who's not here, but we'd be glad to answer your questions. Now's the time in our order of service we set aside for those personal joys and concerns which bring oomph and may make us sometimes quite sad. So if you have a personal joy or sorrow that you'd like to share, this is the time to do so.
Ann Cowan here. I would like to celebrate my new cabinet for the fair trade out there, built by Tom Manny, out of items from my neighbor's trash and his house. And I think it's beautiful, and we should thank Tom for that.
Jim Chanteau, I have a combined joy concern. On Friday, I received a pin for 41 years of service to the state of Kansas at Kansas State University. My concern was it was presented to me personally by Governor Brownback.
I have a joy that I'm going to kindergarten on Tuesday.
We went to visit Sam and Corey in Chicago.
Oh, how great.
We just returned from a 3.5-week road trip, and it ended getting to see Corey's new place and getting to see their new neighborhood, so that was very exciting.
I have a joy that my dog is having her birthday in a few days.
Dick Beeman, just want to say that Sylvia's mom moved to hospice a couple days ago, so keep her and Sylvia in your thoughts, please.
I got a mole on my neck that removed. And they said it wasn't cancer, but it was precancerous, so they had it removed. And for some reason, the doctor said, goodness gracious, when he was working on me. So I'm like, huh. All right, but yeah, they took it out, so it's all good. And my joy also is that I'm more aware of life now, so it's all good.
I have a joy that my father came back for 2 weeks from a deployment, but my concern is he is leaving for another 7 months.
Hi, Kathy Hedge. I have a joy that my grandson has his first Luth tooth. He's very excited.
Luth tooth.
Morning. Kathleen Oldfather. Just wanted to update you that Jack Warren is out of the hospital, and he ended up moving home with 24-hour care at this point. Jack Warren, and he can have visitors.
I am in first grade.
I have a joy that I'm going to go to first grade on Tuesday.
All right. So for all, is there someone else? For all that we have shared and for all that remains in our hearts and minds, let us be mindful of one another as we greet each other and talk with one another and don't talk with one another, that we each carry joys and sorrows that are often not expressed. So now's the time for...
Is this okay? Can you see that without the lights off? It's okay. Thank you, Burke.
Yeah, that's good.
I had a couple of things I wanted to say, and I don't remember them. It would be remiss of me to not mention that Ari is always looking for teachers, helpers, and we're looking right now for 3 to 4 week stints. That's it. Because, of course, the worst sound in church is not a crying baby or a noisy child, but the sound of no babies and no children. This is a game. Everybody, please don't eat these 2 pieces of popcorn that you're going to put on your red piece of paper. Okay? 2 red piece of paper on the floor in front of you, and 2 pieces of, you can pass that around, 2 pieces of popcorn on each piece of paper. And please don't eat them, and put the popcorn in the center of the circle. Thank you in advance to Scott Tonona for this inspiration, to my daughter Lily for remembering it, and Tom Manny as my camera operator advisor. I'm told that the adults today are talking about oneness, together, working on everything together as a team, being together, working together. So this game is something to hopefully keep everyone thinking about that idea. Okay? The idea of the game is that you each have 2 pieces of popcorn. You can either take 2 pieces of popcorn from your neighbor, or you can take 1 piece of popcorn from the community bowl. Now, in a game, generally, what's the outcome? What are you looking to do at the end of a game?
What was that?
Win.
Generally, that's the case. Let's see what happens. We are going to start with Nick. Okay? You can either
We'll go all the way around the circle once and see what happens, okay? So the idea is to win, and you win when you have the most popcorn. Okay? So you can either take two from your neighbor or one from the bowl. Go. We're going to start with Nick. So, and let's do it as quickly as possible. Okay, Lily. Okay, Indigo. One. Okay, Maeve. Okay, Clara. Okay, Jake. Okay. Oh, that's okay. That's good. That's good. That works. Rose, two from your neighbor. Two from your neighbor or one from the bowl. Okay. Jocelyn. That's okay. Jocelyn, two from your neighbor or one from the bowl. That's okay. Yeah. Okay, Leah, two from your neighbor or one from your bowl. Kaya, two from your neighbor or one from the bowl. Okay, Thurston, two from, they're laughing. Wait, just wait. Two from your neighbor or one from the bowl? One from the bowl. Okay, Burke, two from your neighbor or one from your bowl? Okay, who do we have here? Ronan, two from your neighbor or one from the bowl? Connor, two from your neighbor or one from the bowl? Okay, let's count. That's everybody. Let's count the popcorn. We've got one. Put out your pieces so we can see them. Okay. Yeah, because he got two and nobody took them from him. Okay, so 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 0. 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. Jocelyn, can I see your popcorn? 18, 19, 20, 21. Leah? 0. 21. Kaya has 2. 22, 23. Am I close? Quit messing with the camera. What? I lost track. Oh, thanks. 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32. About 32. Okay. Remember that number, 32. Let's divvy up. Everybody get two pieces again. Make sure you have two pieces. Two pieces. Here's two for somebody. Okay, take the piece of paper back. Two pieces. Burke needs a piece. Just take one out of the bucket. Someone must have eaten one. Okay, what was the number? 32. Okay, this time, that's okay. This time, just eat it. Wait, keep them all, both. We'll eat when we're done. Okay, this time, we won't steal from our neighbors, borrow, use, take from our neighbors, but this time, we're going to only take one from the greater community bowl. And hopefully, we'll have a good result at the end. All right, this time we will start with Nick, and we'll go the other direction. Okay, only one from the bowl. Go. Connor. Ronan. Burke. Oh, it's going to be close. Maybe I miscounted. Kaya. Okay, Leah. Jocelyn. Rose. Jake. Take a piece. Clara. Maeve. Indigo. Lily. Impressive. I knew all those names. Okay. See, you could do that too if you were a teacher. All right. No eating. All right. Let's count. Where should we start? Who's going to help? 3, 6. Oh, man.
24, 27, 30, 33, 36, 39, 42.
42. Which way seemed to be the winning way?
42. Any comments? No. Oh, when you
your neighbor you take from the bowl, so everyone has more, even though you may not have as much.
What's so good about that?
Works for me. Point illustrated.
Don't be so greedy and you might have more.
Work for the common good. Is we is or is we ain't together.
Works for me. Let's take the bowl and eat. Thank you, Tom. Okay, let's take the bowl. Pick it up and take it with us. Pick it up and take it with us.
Yeah. Go now in peace. Go now in peace.
Yeah.
May the
popcorn never hurt anybody.
Yeah. That's the movie. Yeah. Whoopsie. All right. Thank you, Sandy.
You have to make a mess in here. Nobody cares.
Jennifer, are you playing or are we doing the... Okay. Smells like a movie theater up here. All right. Let us give so that our connection to what is good and whole may mend lives broken by hate. In the 10th anniversary edition of Alice Walker's The Color Purple, she added a preface, which I think is really a remarkable preface, and I'd like to share it with you. Whatever else the color purple has been taken for during the years since its publication, it remains for me the theological work examining the journey from the religious back to the spiritual that I spent much of my adult life prior to writing it seeking to avoid. Having recognized myself as a worshiper of nature by the age of 11, because my spirit resolutely wandered out the window to find trees and wind during Sunday sermons, I saw no reason why, once free, I should bother with religious matters at all. I would have thought that a book that begins, "Dear God," would immediately have been identified as a book about the desire to encounter, hear from the ultimate ancestor. But it is a sign of our times that this was infrequently the case. Or perhaps it is the pagan transformation of God from patriarchal male supremacist into trees, stars, wind, and everything else that camouflaged for many readers the book's intent to explore the difficult path of someone who starts out in life already a spiritual captive, but who, through her own courage and the help of others, breaks free into the realization that she, like nature itself, is a radiant expression of the heretofore perceived as quite distant divine. If it is true that it is what we run from that chases us, then the color purple is the book that ran me the great mystery's word coming from any Sunday sermon or through any human mouth. There I heard and saw it moving in beauty across the hills. No one is exempt from the possibility of a consciousness, conscious connection to all that is. Not the poor, not the suffering, not the writer sitting in the open field. This is the book in which I was able to express a new spiritual awareness, a rebirth into the strong feelings of oneness. Beyond Justice, a Unitarian Universalist Destiny. Do most of us live in the world loving something and hating something else? Yes. Do we categorize things as good or bad? Yes. Good bread, bad carbs, attracted, repulse? Yes, yes, and yes. Is this wrong? No. Is it right? No. Perhaps our first memory, the first thing that we can recall in our lives, is the beginning of separation from oneness. So, as an adult, as a teenager, as a child, somehow to return to that sense of oneness is a return to the great mystery. Does a separating from one thing from another help you to discover the core meaning of your existence? Does it reveal the most profound truths of your existence? No, I don't think so. Even though we are trained to isolate and define from an early age, don't touch that burner. Don't put that fork in the electric socket. I told you 10 times. Don't eat dirt. We're told lots of things. There's a really interesting poem that was recently published by Michael Dickman, a young man, called Akhmatova, which is Anna Akhmatova is a great Russian poet of the early 19th century. Her love poems and her poems that really express the horror of oppression that Stalinism and Leninism and all of that happening really wrought on the people. Akhmatova. That's right. I remember. I was on a beach looking at haystack rock, putting my finger into the mouths of sea anemones, their tentacles sweeping over my knuckles. I was whispering the word brother. I was whispering the word sister to the other. Though maybe they were both. I wanted to be close to another species. I had been reading about the dark windows Akhmatova looked through to see if her son had been let out of prison. As I walked around the shallow pools, feeling like I had done a good job being myself, I heard my third grade teacher whisper into my ear, "What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? You want to be stupid your whole life?" She was a nun and wore, I imagined, a rosary of barbed wire underneath her white blouse. No matter how long I put my finger into the natural world, no matter how long I mistake the flies above the trash for stars, Akhmatova's son will be chained against a wall. The sea will still push against the rock, and part of me will be sitting near a window in my homeroom, my head lowered, skeleton warm inside my body, my brothers and sisters alive in the salty pools of the world. It's an amazing poem in its ability to span the tension between the wonder of a third grader exploring tide pools and the awful reality of people being chained in prison for their political or religious beliefs without letting go of wonder. An amazing ability. The first use of the word sincere is said to have happened sometime in the 15th century, and it comes from the Latin sinceris. And it was used by Christians who were breaking away from Catholicism because they wanted to have a more pure and complete and without any kind of mucky stuff around it, the life of the radical Jesus. And so sincerity was first used in a religious sense to mean wholeness, pureness, not defiled. And if you think of the Jesus that is said to have been historically alive, he believed, if I'm correct, that it was not a heaven that you looked for up there or down there or someplace else, but it was right here in the center of your being right now. It's like Buddhahood, Buddha nature. We all have it if you believe in Buddhism. You all have it. We're just obscuring it. We're defiling it. We're making it kind of messy. So it's an interesting kind of way to think about it because Jesus said that only the child will enter the kingdom of heaven because they have this capacity for wonder that doesn't shut down. Now, that is a little, 15th century, but it does have application today. We, as a member of the Congregation of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to affirm and promote respect for the interdependent web of existence of which we are all a part. Of which we are all a part. Not just the parts you like, not just the parts you feel comfortable with, but the whole shebang, the whole deal. The sun chained to a prison and the sea anemones. If you look at just in a broad sweep the history of Unitarian Universalism, you will see an incredible ability to track down the source of wonder because it strips away continually over the centuries all that stuff which makes it foreign and alien, things that you have to do, indulgences that you have to buy, all these things that you have to say. No, it's right here, right now. Everyone is saved if anybody is saved. That's universalism. And Unitarianism said, don't look at the miracles. Don't look at all these things that people say, this is proof that blah, blah, blah exists and blah, blah, blah exists. You have to use your own experience as a filter to know what is true. You have to experience it. You have to be in your experience. It's a remarkable trajectory. Oneness. We don't have to rely on miracles to sense and know the mystery of life. But it does help to make more room for all the connections that are there and to be cognizant of them and to feel them and not to just deny them. So that if you're stuck in traffic, it doesn't mean it's a bad day. You have to connect it to the vast mystery. That's the hard part. But that is the kind of question that is posed by Unitarian Universalists, to find a way to bring meaning to every single moment. Barbara Kruger, who was interviewed in the Smithsonian recently, is known as an abstract impressionist. Not an abstract impressionist, but an extract impressionist. Her installations question our place in the world, the role of power and control, love and money, death, pleasure, pain. Currently at the Hirshhorn Museum in Washington, D.C., her exhibit is called Belief Plus Doubt. In an earlier work, she used the phrase belief plus doubt equals sanity. Doubt subtracts blind certainty from the equation. And she goes on to say in the interview that agnosticism does not rely on certainty. If you believe in God or define yourself as an atheist, you tend to polarize yourself in one extreme or the other, that you're certain that there is no God, or you are certain that there is a God. But agnosticism, she said, it's easier to be a pedophile, she says, than it is to be an agnostic in this world, because doubt is perilous in this time when you should know what you believe and why. So, it's that middle ground. It's that muddy place. It's the tide pools. She said, doubt is almost grounds for arrest. She doesn't believe in the binary way of looking at things, that using dualism to separate this out and that out. So on the front of our order of service, she says, as a response to the question, do you believe in empathy? No, I don't know if it has been hardwired into us. But I mean, I have never engaged in the war of sexes. It's too binary. The good versus the bad. Who's the good? So she says her art is an attempt to help people think beyond categories, move into the ambiguity. And Unitarian Universalism is known for its ambiguity, because you can believe anything you want to, right, as long as that you have are personally responsible for it. Kendall Gibbons, who is now the minister at All Souls in Kansas City, wrote, we are not skeptics because nothing is sacred. No, we withhold our assent to unproven claims because integrity matters, because the real experience is so primal and so powerful that it must not be captured and exploited for lesser purposes. Abraham Lincoln said, in the Senate of Illinois, a house divided against itself cannot stand. I believe the government cannot endure permanently half slave and half free. I do not expect the union to be dissolved. I do expect the house to fall. I do not expect the house to fall, but I do expect it will cease to be divided. And then in his famous 164-word address, the Gettysburg Address, which had followed an hour oration by Everett Hale, he says, 4 score and 7 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. What would you do if you were chained in a prison for your religious beliefs, or in a concentration camp because of your ethnic heritage? In Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl says, under the influence of a world which no longer recognized the value of human life and human dignity, which had robbed man of his will and had made him an object to be exterminated, having planned, however, to make full use of him first to the last ounce of his physical resources, under this influence, the personal ego finally suffered a loss of values. If the man in the concentration camp did not struggle against this in a last effort to save his self-respect, he lost his feeling of being an individual, a being with a mind, with inner freedom and personal value. So the one thing that you can't have taken from you, stripped from you, is that sense of personal value. And he goes on to say, we who lived in the concentration camps can remember the men who walked through the huts comforting others, giving away their last piece of bread. They may have been few in number, but they offer sufficient proof that everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstance, to choose one's own way. There are always choices to be made. The sort of person the prisoner became was the result of an inner decision. You can determine what shall become of you mentally and spiritually. In another place in this great book, he says, love is the ultimate and the highest goal to which we can aspire. Everything can be taken. But if someplace in your heart and in your soul you hold on to that which you most value and love, you do not die broken. I'd like to read a passage from The Color Purple. And for its time, it was really controversial. It's about two black women who are lovers. And Suge is one of them, and Celie is, everyone who has seen the movie or read the book remembers, is the great character who rises above the most awful circumstances imaginable that can be done to a young woman and a woman. Well, say Suge, if he came to any of these churches we talking about, he'd have to have it conked before anybody paid him attention. He's talking about Jesus, because they believed Jesus had Brillo hair. That the last thing niggers want to think about they got is that his hair kinky. That's the truth, I say. Ain't no way to read the Bible and not think God white, Suge say. Then she sigh. When I found out, I thought God was a white and a man, I lost interest. You mad 'cause you don't seem to listen to your prayers. Do the mayor listen to anything colors say? Here's the thing, say Suge, the thing I believe. God is inside you and inside everybody else. You come into the world with God, but only them that search for it inside find it. And sometimes it's just manifest itself even if you're not looking or don't know what you're looking for. Trouble do for it, most folks, I think. Sorrow, Lord, feeling like shit. It? I asked. Yeah, it. God ain't a he or she, but a it. But what do a it look like? I asked. Don't look like nothing, she say. It ain't a picture show. It ain't something you can look at apart from anything else, including yourself. I believe God is everything, Shug say. Everything that is or ever was or ever will be. And when you can feel that and be happy to feel that, you found it. Shug, a beautiful something, let me tell you. She frowned a little, looked out across the yard, leaned back in her chair, looked like a big rose. She say, my first step from the old white man was trees, then air, then birds, then other people. But one day, when I was sitting quiet and feeling like a motherless child, which I was, it came to me. That feeling of being a part of everything, not separate at all. I knew that if I cut a tree, my arm would bleed, and I laughed and I cried and I ran all around the house. I knew just what it was. In fact, when it happened, you can't miss it. It's sort of like, you know what she say, grinning and rubbing high up on the thigh. Shug, I say. Oh, she say, God love all them feelings. That's some of the best stuff God did. And when you know God loves them, you enjoy them even a bit more. You can just relax, go with everything that's going. And praise God by liking what you like. God don't think it's dirty? I asked. Nah, she said. God made it. God love everything you love, and a mess of stuff you don't. But more than anything else, God love admiration. So here we have a woman who at 12 and 13 was raped by her father and gave birth to two children that were sold, and then was kind of sold to a man to be his wife so she could hoe the fields and cook the food and keep the house clean, and he beat her regularly without any reason. She never knew when she was going to be beaten. And then she finds a friend who sees her, Shug. And she says yes to this Seeley. She says yes to everything about Seeley. And Seeley begins to see herself, and she begins to feel the wonder of herself. So it's not done alone. It's done with others. And by the end of the book, she has made peace with the husband that beat her, who has seen somehow another way of living and being in relationship with his ex-wife. They sit on the porch. He sews shirts and she sews pants. And they look across the yard, waiting to see Shug drive up. So there's lots of stories of heroism and all the kinds of things that really give nobility to being human. But once we start to continue to separate out and to analyze everything and to pick apart, oh, I don't like Michael because he gets too close to the microphone, or he does this or he does that, then the relationship becomes distant. We all do that. But to the extent that we become aware that that connection is precious and vital, and to the extent that you open up to being in the commerce of love instead of the commerce of winning, of not taking someone else's popcorn, but taking from the community bowl to be sharing. Then the wonder of the world opens up to each of us in a way that can't happen if it's about winning or losing. And as we move into the election cycle more fiercely, I would ask that each of us take time away from being so vitriolic or so impassioned about our candidate or so impassioned against someone else, and to remember the ambiguity that somehow we're all in this together, not apart, together. And it takes brave people like Unitarian Universalists to begin to create that space where it's okay to doubt and yet also celebrate the wonder. Perhaps to help you along with this, if you have a hard time finding wonder in every day, is to keep a list for a month of every time you feel wonder and just look at it at the end of the month. And if there are only two sources, a grandchild and some TV show, maybe you need to diversify. But celebrate the wonder that you do feel and allow it to open up other places of wonder, because it's in that place where we will help to heal this country from its brokenness, from its long history of taking land from the Native Americans to enslaving African Americans, African people, and all the kinds of other subjugations and oppression that go on in this country. We need to do the healing work. Yes, we need to know what's right and wrong, and sometimes to pick sides, but let's always be looking for that middle ground. Unitarian Universalism, from its most fundamental and profound perspectives, asks each of us to move from dualistic thinking to know the wholeness of life, the wholeness of being, the wholeness that comes from loving openly. Ultimately, to not let hate divide your heart into sections, into neighborhoods, into whatever, mind and spirit into separate pieces, but to allow love to see all the connections that make us human, and to live out of that love in a way that strengthens connections and doesn't break them, so that we may all, every creature, every human being, somehow, in some way I can't even imagine, find heaven on earth together, here, now. So, how in your life do you experience wonder, or do you deal with those moments when you're just enraged by something and you move into a place where you hate? How do you correct that? Because we know hate is a toxic thing. How do you find wholeness in a world that asks us to make so many choices, to identify ourselves as this or that? Ruth.
One of my favorite sayings is Descartes, je doute, donc je suis. I doubt, therefore I am. I think about that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
This is very good. You talked about embracing wonder and moving away from these toxic things into wholeness. Do we have an inner spirit, or do we have some help from someplace to help us do that?
I can only answer for myself. I do rely on an inner spirit, and I do rely on prayer.
What are these inner spirits?
That, I think, is something that is inner sensing of what is true and whole, and you know it with your entire being.
You say inner sensing.
Right. So, but I don't really feel like it's, I want to expand on what my experience is so much. I would like to hear about other people's experience.
I'd like to hear yours, but another time.
Okay, we'll do that, Les. Thanks.
You know, one of the things I realized about myself is being in Kansas, and I think even from childhood, is how fearful people are about asking, and they make lots of assumptions. And I think, you know, during the campaign trail, even as a teacher, I'm an outlier of sorts in Kansas for many reasons. but I keep telling people, give yourself permission to ask. Don't just assume. It's okay to ask. You don't have to be thinking. Somewhere along the line, people said your thoughts are wrong. And then you stop asking because you're afraid you're going to be wrong all the time by somebody. So I think that's one thing that I had to get past is asking questions and then telling everybody it's okay to ask me what my bindi is because people feel afraid. I don't want to offend you, but can you tell me what that means? And I said, I'm so happy you asked because so many people make those assumptions. And I think I feel it more in a lot in Kansas. It's easy to move to someplace else so I don't feel like an outlier and I can feel more like I belong somewhere. But I think even from children, giving them permission, it's okay to ask lots and lots of questions instead of just going from tradition down and making assumptions. And I think that's where the wonderment has to keep going. Even as adults, I think we assume mm-hmm. that we know we are the wisest ones, and we're not. We still have so much to learn. And I think that's an evolutionary process. But I feel that within myself as I'm talking to lots of people in rural areas, it's okay to ask me questions, but they don't. Sometimes they're just afraid. Mm-hmm. I think they have to get past the fear. Knowledge is not going to really hurt you. It's going to help you a lot more, I think.
Thank you.
It might be helpful or it might not be helpful, but I'll tell you where I get my inner help. I think there's a spirit in there. It's a thrust. It's an urge, me onto wholeness and unconditional love. And I think it evolved through past generations inasmuch as my grandfather and my father is with me all the time. That's a spirit mm-hmm. that I rely on to help me be whole. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense, anybody?
Yes, thanks. Thanks, Les.
We have a 2.5-year-old that's in the nursery now, and for him, I know a lot of people get a sense of wonder by being more childlike, but for me, there's two things about him that help his sense of wonder and help mine too. One is that he is never in a hurry. He is always going slow and much slower than I would like a lot of times. he's the reason we're late a lot of times, but it's because he's looking at everything. And the other thing is just his different sense of perspective. We were walking with my father-in-law about a week ago, and my son notices a cicada shell stuck on a tree. And my father-in-law is just amazed. He's like, wow, this kid's got eagle eyes. It's amazing. He can see these things. And I thought, no, that's right at eye level height for him. Like, because he's taking a different perspective than we are, he sees different things than we do. And so trying to step in his shoes a little bit, slow down, and look at things from a different perspective, then I gain a sense of wonder again about nature, since right now that's his sense of wonder is dinosaurs and nature and things like that. So I've learned a lot from him.
Thanks.
Back in 2000, I was having difficulty with the election, and a friend of mine in Lawrence told me that if the one comes in that I didn't want, and we all went to war, that if we all blew each other up, then the earth could rejuvenate itself. So that kind of opened it up, where I thought, okay, what's the better good? And I try to remember that in the community, and then church community and work community, that if things don't go the way I want, there's going to be some better good there. And I think the speaker last spring that Ryan Meyer brought here, the chaplain talking about PTSD really helped me because he talked about the things his patients were asked to do while overseas, and it made me realize when I was working at the elementary school last year, if some teacher doesn't want to let a kid go to the bathroom at that time, it, in the end, it really doesn't matter because kids elsewhere are is just horrible stuff. So that seminar here at the church helped me a lot think of my whole self and what I'm asked to do in more holistic sense.
I just want to say that the beauty of the violin this morning certainly nurtured whatever's within me. Mm-hmm. And another thing is the flowers that are there, and they're so beautifully arranged, and I just wondered who provided them, because that is nurturing also
mm-hmm.
to me. Yeah. Well, I thank her.
All right. Anybody else is there somebody else who would like to add something? Yes, Christopher.
This conversation went in a different direction than I thought the title indicated. So it's been interesting to sit here. There's a couple things. First of all, I think we need to cut the plug. That comes from a quote, television, the plug-in drug, back in the 60s. And I forget the author's name. I used to know it. Doesn't come up right now. But I really think we're so caught up in this 24-hour news cycle that we can't tell truth from fiction anymore, because a lot of stuff is just made up to fill time. And I really think in the approaching months, we need to cut the plug. And I just go up and turn off, you know, I don't watch much TV. I listen to the radio, NPR, and I just, when it gets onto the political stuff, I just turn it off anymore. I'm tired of it. Now, a lot of people would say that we need to know about that to be informed. I think at this point in time, we can become informed without being on a constant stream of media. Then when I want to find something inside me, I always go to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights as my cornerstone. And I look at that, and just this week I was trying to explain some ideas about that to a cousin of mine who we're having a major discussion over abortion about. Because I think that as a people, and the Unitarian Universalism embraces the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and all the other covenants that have come out from that. And I think when we start looking at one another through that kind of a framework, then we start finding that common ground. The issue then becomes is when somebody disengages and say, I'm not going to be part of that. It's my way or no way. And that's what I see us becoming in this country. We're becoming more and more divided rather than to see commonality. And the common good, in particular, I think is under threat right now. And that really scares me, because I don't know what that will mean for our children if there is, in a sense, a common good left in our nation.
We have time for the last two, and then we'll do our hymn.
Pat Embers, earlier in July, I attended the Council of the 13 Indigenous Grandmothers in Lame Deer, Montana, and there were many things from that, and I'm not going to go through much, but what has struck me today in our conversation and in your topics, and especially when you read from The Color Purple, and the two women and just the wounding and the hurt, but also the recognition of what was going on by them, their insight. I was remembering of the pretty much the theme of this conference was about ancestral wounding and trying to heal that. And there's a lot I don't want to go into much because there's so much, but it also was called soul wounding, but there was just a lot of ancestral wounding of suppressed the Indians, that was oppressive, and there were people there whose ancestors were the ones who oppressed the Indians that talked. There were white people that were there. I mean, there were both white and Indian people, but one really thought a lot about your own sense of justice and what you feel and how you participate by not just your life, but what has happened with your ancestors and how that maybe has influenced you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just an aspect that came in that I felt when you read that part of that book also.
Thanks, Pat. And then Kim?
The concept of the interdependent web is something that I think is lovely. The oneness, the idea that we are all one, is something that I struggle with, and I want to believe it, and it's something I'm working on, but I don't totally believe it. I have to be honest. So, but when I think about it, and when I just try to believe it, I do feel this sort of expanding in my chest or something, in my spirit. I feel like I'm reaching out somehow, and it feels right. And so I know that for myself, for my spirit to grow, I need space and I need quiet, but also music, and I do yoga and I go outside, and somehow I feel more myself that way. And then I think that's probably helpful for everybody, that oneness.
Yeah, thank you. So let us now stand and sing our closing hymn, Our World is One World. If you don't believe it, you don't have to sing it. Let me share these words to close our service from Dag Hammarskjöld. Beyond obedience, its attention fixed on the goal, freedom from fear, beyond fear, openness, and beyond that, love. Go in peace.